It was a historic and a hefty battle when Mylar and Perseu were scheduled to don the gloves for the purse of 50 sovereigns. Handicapped as he was by lack of poundage, Dublin's pet lamb made up for it by superlative skill in ringcraft. The final bout of fireworks was a grueling for both champions. The welterweight sergeant-major had tapped some lively claret in the previous mix-up, during which Keogh had been receiver-general of rights and lefts, the artilleryman putting in some neat work on the pet's nose, and Mylar came on looking groggy. The soldier got to business, leading off with a powerful left jab, to which the Irish gladiator retaliated by shooting out a stiff one flush to the point of Bennett's jaw. The red coat ducked, but the Dubliner lifted him with a left hook, the body punch being a fine one. The men came to handy grips. Mylar quickly became busy and got his man under, the bout ending with the bulkier man on the ropes, Mylar punishing him. The Englishman, whose right eye was nearly closed, took his corner where he was liberally drenched with water, and when the bell went, came on gamey and brimful of pluck, confident of knocking out the fistic Eblenite in jig time. It was a fight to a finish, and the best man for it. The two fought like tigers, and excitement ran fever high. The referee twice cautioned Pucking Percy for holding, but the pet was tricky and his footwork a treat to watch. After a brisk exchange of courtesies, during which a smart uppercut of the military man brought blood freely from his opponent's mouth, the lamb suddenly waded in all over his man and landed a terrific left to battling Bennett's stomach, flooring him flat. It was a knockout clean and clever. Amid tense expectation, the Portobello bruiser was being counted out when Bennett's second, Ole Fats Wetstein, threw in the towel, and the Santry Bye was declared victor to the frenzied cheers of the public, who broke through the ring ropes and fairly mobbed them with delight. "He knows which side his bread is buttered," says Alf. "I hear he's running a concert tour now up in the north." "He is," says Joe. "Isn't he? Who?" says Bloom. "Ah, yes, that's quite true. Yes, a kind of summer tour, you see. Just a holiday." "Mrs. B is the bright particular star, isn't she?" says Joe. "My wife?" says Bloom. "She's singing, yes. I think it will be a success, too. He's an excellent man to organize." "Excellent." "Ho, ho, big ob," says I to myself, says I. "That explains the milk in the coconut and absence of hair on the animal's chest. Blazes doing the tootle on the flute. Concert tour. Dirty Dan the Dodger's son off Island Bridge that sold the same horses twice over to the government to fight the Boers. Old what-what. I called about the poor and water rate, Mr. Boylan. You what? The water rate, Mr. Boylan. You what-what? That's the buckle that'll organise or take my tip twixt me and you, Caderish. Pride of Kelpie's Rocky Mount, the raven-haired daughter of Tweedy. There grew she to peerless beauty where loquat and almond scent the air. The gardens of Alameda knew her step, the garths of olives knew and bowed. The chaste spouse of Leopold is she, Marion of the bountiful bosoms. And lo, there entered one of the clan of the O'Molloys, a comely hero of white face, yet withal somewhat ruddy, his majesty's counsel learned in the law, and with him the prince and heir of the noble line of Lambert. Hello, Ned. Hello, Alf. Hello, Jack. Hello, Joe. God save ye," says the citizen. "Save ye kindly," says J.J. "What'll it be, Ned?" "Half one," says Ned. So J.J. ordered the drinks. "We around at the court," says Joe. "Yes," says J.J. "He'll square that, Ned," says he. "Hope so," says Ned. Now, what were those two at? J.J. getting him off the grand jury list, and the other give him a leg over the stile, with his name in Stubbs's, playing cards, hobnobbing with flash toffs with a swank glass in their eye, a drinking fizz, and he half smothered in writs and garnishy orders, pawning his gold watch in Cummins of Francis Street, where no one would know him in the private office, when I was there with Pisser, releasing his boots out of the pop. "What's your name, sir?" "Dunn," says he. "Aye, and Dunn," says I. "Gob, he'll come home by Weeping Cross one of those days, I'm thinking. Did you see that bloody lunatic Breen round there?" says Alf. "U.P. Up. Yes, says J.J., looking for a private detective. Aye, says Ned, and he wanted right go wrong to address the court, only Corny Kelleher got round him, telling him to get the handwriting examined first. £10,000, says Alf, laughing. God, I'd give anything to hear him before a judge and jury. Was it you did it, Alf? Says Joe. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you, Jimmy Johnson. Me, says Alf. Don't cast your nasturtiums on my character. Whatever statement you make, says Joe, will be taken down in evidence against you. Of course an action would lie, says J.J. It implies that he is not compos mentis, U.P. Up. Compos your eye, says Alf, laughing. Do you know that he's bammy? Look at his head. Do you know that some mornings he has to get his hat on with a shoe on? Yes, says J.J., but the truth of a libel is no defence to an indictment for publishing it in the eyes of the law. Ha ha, Alf, says Joe. Still, says Bloom, on account of the poor woman, I mean his wife. Pity about her, says the citizen, or any other woman marries a half and half. Oh, half and half, says Bloom. Do you mean he... Half and half, I mean, says the citizen, a fellow that's neither fish nor flesh. Nor good red herring, says Joe. That's what I mean, says the citizen. A pishog, if you know what that is. Begob, I saw there was trouble coming, and Bloom explaining he meant, on account of it being cruel for the wife, having to go round after the old stuttering fool. Cruelty to animals, so it is, to let that bloody poverty-stricken breen out on grass with his beard out tripping him, bringing down the rain. And she with her nose cock-a-hoop after she married him, because a cousin of his old fella's was pew-opener to the Pope. Picture of him on the wall with his smash all Sweeney's moustaches, the Signor Breeny from Summerhill, the Italiano papal zouave to the Holy Father, has left the key and gone to Moss Street. And who was he, tell us? A nobody, 2 pair back and passages at 7 shillings a week, and he covered with all kinds of breastplates bidding defiance to the world. And moreover, says J.J., a postcard is publication. It was held to be sufficient evidence of malice in the test case, Sadgrove versus Hole. In my opinion, an action might lie. 6 and 8 pence, please. Who wants your opinion? Let us drink our pints in peace. Cob, we won't be let even do that much itself. Well, good health, Jack, says Ned. Good health, Ned, says J.J. There he is again, says Joe. Where? Says Alf. And begob, there he was, passing the door with his books under his oxter, and the wife beside him. And Corny Kelleher with his walleye looking in as they went past, talking to him like a father, trying to sell him a second-hand coffin. How did that Canada swindle case go off? Says Joe. Remanded, says J.J. One of the bottle-nosed fraternity it was went by the name of James Watt, alias Saphiro, alias Spark and Spiro, put an ad in the paper saying he'd give a passage to Canada for 20 bob. What? Do you see any green in the white of my eye? Course it was a bloody barney. What? Swindled them all, skivvies and bad hacks from the County Meath, aye, and his own kidney, too. J.J. was telling us there was an ancient Hebrew, Zaretsky or something, weeping in the witness box with his hat on him, swearing by the Holy Moses he was stuck for 2 quid. Who tried the case? Says Joe. Recorder, says Ned. Poor El Sir Frederick, says Alf. You can cut him up to the 2 eyes. Heart as big as a lion, says Ned. Tell him a tale of woe about arrears of rent, and a sick wife, and a squad of kids, and faith he'll dissolve in tears on the bench. Aye, says Alf. Reuben J. was bloody lucky he didn't clap him in the dock the other day for suing poor little Gumley that's minding stones for the corporation there near Butt Bridge. And he starts taking off the old recorder, letting on to cry, a most scandalous thing. This poor hard-working man, how many children? 10, did you say? Yes, your worship, and my wife has the typhoid. And the wife with typhoid fever? Scandalous! Leave the court immediately, sir. No, sir, I'll make no order for payment. How dare you, sir, come up before me and ask me to make an order? A poor, hard-working, industrious man. I dismiss the case. And whereas on the 16th day of the month of the Ox-eyed Goddess, and in the 3rd week after the feast day of the Holy and Undivided Trinity, the Daughter of the Skies, the Virgin Moon, being then in her 1st quarter, it came to pass that those learned judges repaired them to the halls of law. Their master Courtney, sitting in his own chamber, gave his reed, and master Justice Andrews, sitting without a jury in the probate court, weighed well and pondered the claim of the 1st chargeant upon the property in the matter of the will propounded and final testamentary disposition in re the real and personal estate of the late lamented Jacob Halliday, vintner, deceased, versus Livingston, an infant of unsound mind, and another. And to the solemn court of Green Street there came Sir Frederick the Falconer, and he sat him there about the hour of 5 o'clock to administer the law of the Brehons at the commission for all that and those parts to be holden in and for the county of the city of Dublin. And there sat with him the high Sinhedrim of the 12 tribes of Ire, for every tribe one man, of the tribe of Patrick, and of the tribe of Hugh, and of the tribe of Owen, and of the tribe of Con, and of the tribe of Oscar, and of the tribe of Fergus, and of the tribe of Finn, and of the tribe of Dermot, and of the tribe of Cormac, and of the tribe of Kevin, and of the tribe of Calta, and of the tribe of Ossian, there being in all 12 good men and true. And he conjured them by him who died on Rood, that they should well and truly try and true deliverance make in the issue joined between their sovereign lord the king and the prisoner at the bar, and true verdict give, according to the evidence, so help them God, and kiss the book. And they rose in their seats, those 12 of Ire, and they swore by the name of him who is from everlasting that they would do his right wiseness. And straightway the minions of the law led forth from their dungeon keep one whom the sleuth-hounds of justice had apprehended in consequence of information received, and they shackled him hand and foot, and would take of him na bail na main prize, but preferred a charge against him, for he was a malefactor. "Those are nice things," says the citizen, "coming over here to Ireland, filling the country with bugs." So Bloom lets on he heard nothing, and he starts talking with Joe, telling him he needn't trouble about that little matter till the 1st, but if he would just say a word to Mr. Crawford. And so Joe swore high and holy by this and by that he'd do the divil and all. "Because, you see," says Bloom, "for an advertisement you must have repetition. That's the whole secret."
"Rely on me," says Joe.
"Swindling the peasants," says the citizen, "and the poor of Ireland. We want no more strangers in our house." "Oh, I'm sure that will be all right, Hines," says Bloom. "It's just that keys, you see."
"Consider that done," says Joe.
"Very kind of you," says Bloom. "The strangers," says the citizen, "our own fault. We let them come in. We brought them in. The adulteress and her paramour brought the Saxon robbers here."
"Decree nisi," says J.J.
And Bloom, letting on to be awfully deeply interested in nothing, a spider's web in the corner behind the battle, and the citizen scowling after him, and the old dog at his feet looking up to know who to bite and win. "A dishonoured wife," says the citizen. "That's what's the cause of all our misfortunes."
"And here she is," says Alf, "that was giggling over the Police Gazette with Terry on the counter in all her war paint."
"Give us a squint at her," says I.
"And what was it? Only one of the smutty Yankee pictures Terry borrows off of Corny Kelleher. Secrets for enlarging your private parts. Misconduct of society, Bell. Norman W. Tupper, wealthy Chicago contractor, finds pretty but faithless wife in lap of Officer Taylor. Bell in her bloomers misconducting herself, and her fancy man feeling for her tickles. And Norman W. Tupper bouncing in with his pea-shooter just in time to be late, after she doing the trick of the loop with Officer Taylor."
"Oh, jackers, Jenny," says Joe, "how short your shirt is."
"There's hair, Joe," says I. "Get a queer old tail-end of corned beef off of that one, what?" So anyhow in came John Wise Nolan and Lenehan with him, with a face on him as long as a late breakfast.
"Well," says the citizen, "what's the latest from the scene of action? What did those tinkers in the City Hall at their caucus meeting decide about the Irish language?"
O'Nolan, clad in shining armour, low bending, made obeisance to the puissant and high and mighty chief of all Erin, and did him to wit of that which had befallen, how that the grave elders of the most obedient city, second of the realm, had met them in the Tulsel, and there, after due prayers to the gods who dwell in Aether Supernal, had taken solemn counsel whereby they might, if so be it might be, bring once more into honour among mortal men the winged speech of the sea-divided gale. "It's on the march," says the citizen, "to hell with the bloody brutal Sassenachs and their patois." So J.J. puts in a word, doing the tough about one story was good till you heard another, and blinking facts, and the Nelson policy, putting your blind eye to the telescope, and drawing up a bill of attainder to impeach a nation, and Bloom trying to back him up, moderation and botheration, and their colonies and their civilization. "Their syphilisation, you mean," says the citizen, "to hell with them, the curse of a good-for-nothing godlight sideways on the bloody tick-lugged sons of whores gets. No music and no art and no literature worthy of the name. Any civilization they have, they stole from us. Tongue-tied sons of bastards' ghosts." "The European family," says J.J. "They're not Europeans," says the citizen. "I was in Europe with Kevin Egan of Paris. You wouldn't see a trace of them or their language anywhere in Europe except in a cabinet de sens." "And," says John Wise, "full many a flower is born to blush unseen." And says Lenehan, that knows a bit of the lingo, "Conspue les Anglais, perfide Albion." He said, and then lifted he in his rude great brawny strengthy hands, "The mether of dark, strong, foamy ale," and uttering his tribal slogan, "Lam Jarg Abu," he drank to the undoing of his foes. A race of mighty valorous heroes, rulers of the waves, who sit on thrones of alabaster, silent as the deathless gods. "What's up with you?" says I to Lenehan. "You look like a fellow that had lost a bob and found a tanner." "Gold cup," says he. "Who won, Mr. Lenehan?" says Terry. "Throw away," says he, "a 20-1, a rank outsider, and the rest nowhere." "And Bass's mare?" says Terry. "Still running," says he. "We're all in a cart. Boylan plunged £2 on my tip, scepter for himself and a lady friend. I had half a crown myself," says Terry, "on Zinfandel that Mr. Flynn gave me. Lord Howard de Walden's." 20-1, says Lenehan. "Such is life in an outhouse. Throw away," says he, takes the biscuit and talking about bunions. "Frailty, thy name is Sceptre." So he went over to the biscuit tin Bob Dorden left to see if there was anything he could lift on the nod, the old car after him, backing his luck with his mangy snout up. Old Mother Hubbard went to the cupboard. "Not there, my child," says he. "Keep your pecker up," says Joe. "She'd have won the money only for the other dog." And J.J. and the citizen arguing about law and history, with Bloom sticking in an odd word. "Some people," says Bloom, "can see the mote in others' eyes, but they can't see the beam in their own." "Rimeus," says the citizen, "there's no one as blind as the fellow that won't see, if you know what that means. Where are our missing 20 millions of Irish should be here today instead of 4, our lost tribes, and our potteries and textiles, the finest in the whole world, and our wool that was sold in Rome in the time of Juvenal, and our flax and our damask from the looms of Antrim, and our Limerick lace, our tanneries and our white flint glass down there by Ballybar, and our Huguenot poplin that we have since Jacquard de Leon, and our woven silk and our Foxford tweeds, and ivory raised point from the Carmelite convent in New Ross, nothing like it in the whole wide world. Where are the Greek merchants that came through the Pillars of Hercules, the Gibraltar now grabbed by the foe of mankind, with gold and Tyrian purple to sell in Wexford at the Fair of Carmen, read Tacitus and Ptolemy, even Giraldus Cambrensis, wine, peltries, Connemara marble, silver from Tipperary, second to none, our far-famed horses, even today, the Irish hobbies, with King Philip of Spain offering to pay customs duties for the right to fish in our waters. What do the yellow Johns of Anglia owe us for our ruined trade and our ruined hearts? And the beds of the Barrow and Shannon, they won't deepen with millions of acres of marsh and bog to make us all die of consumption? As treeless as Portugal will be soon, says John Wise, or Heligoland with its one tree, if something is not done to re-afforest the land. Larches, firs, all the trees of the Conifer family are going fast. I was reading a report of Lord Castletown's. Save them, says the citizen, the giant ash of Galway, and the chieftain elm of Kildare, with a 40-foot bole and an acre of foliage. Save the trees of Ireland for the future men of Ireland on the fair hills of Era O. Europe has its eyes on you, says Lenehan. The fashionable international world attended en masse this afternoon at the wedding of the Chevalier Jean Wise de Nolan, Grand High Chief Ranger of the Irish National Foresters, with Miss Far Conifer of Pine Valley, Lady Sylvester Elmshade, Mrs. Barbara Lovebirch, Mrs. Paul Ash, Mrs. Holly Hazel-Eyes, Miss Daphne Bays, Miss Dorothy Canebrake, Mrs. Clyde Twelvetrees, Mrs. Rowan Green, Mrs. Helen Vine-Gadding, Miss Virginia Creeper, Miss Gladys Beach, Miss Olive Garth, Miss Blanche Maple, Mrs. Maud Mahogany, Miss Myra Myrtle, Miss Priscilla Elderflower, Miss B. Honeysuckle, Miss Grace Poplar, Miss O. Mimosa San, Miss Rachel Cedarfrond, the Mrs. Lillian and Viola Lilac, Miss Timidity Aspinall, Mrs. Kitty Dewey Moss, Miss May Hawthorne, Mrs. Gloriana Palm, Mrs. Leanna Forrest, Mrs. Arabella Blackwood, and Mrs. Norma Holyoake of Oak Home Regis graced the ceremony by their presence. The bride, who was given away by her father, the McConifer of the Glens, looked exquisitely charming in a creation carried out in green, mercerized silk, moulded on an underslip of gloaming grey, sashed with a yoke of broad emerald, and finished with a triple flounce of darker-hued fringe, the scheme being relieved by bretelles and hip insertions of acorn bronze. The maids of honour, Miss Larch Conifer and Miss Spruce Conifer, sisters of the bride, wore very becoming costumes in the same tone, a dainty motif of plume rose being worked into the pleats in a pinstripe and repeated capriciously in the jade-green toques in the form of heron feathers of pale-tinted coral. Señor Enrique Flor presided at the organ with his well-known ability, and in addition to the prescribed numbers of the nuptial mass, played a new and striking arrangement of Woodman Spared That Tree at the conclusion of the service. On leaving the Church of St. Fiacre in Horto, after the papal blessing, the happy pair were subjected to a playful crossfire of hazelnuts, beechmast, bay leaves, catkins of willow, ivy tod, holly berries, mistletoe sprigs, and quicken shoots. Mr. and Mrs. Wise Conifer Nolan will spend a quiet honeymoon in the Black Forest. And our eyes are on Europe, says the citizen. We had our trade with Spain and the French and with the Flemings before those mongrels were pupped. Spanish ale in Galway, the wine bark on the wine dark waterway. And will again, says Joe, and with the help of the Holy Mother of God we will again, says the citizen, clapping his thigh. Our harbours that are empty will be full again, Queenstown, Kinsale, Galway, Blacksod Bay, Ventry in the Kingdom of Kerry, Killybegs, the third largest harbour in the wide world, with a fleet of masts of the Galway Lynches and the Cavan O'Reillys, and the O'Kennedys of Dublin, when the Earl of Desmond could make a treaty with the Emperor Charles V himself. And will again, says he, when the first Irish battleship is seen breasting the waves with our own flag to the fore. None of your Henry Tudor's harps, no, the oldest flag afloat, the flag of the province of Desmond and Thomond, three crowns on a blue field, the three sons of Melisius. And he took the last swig out of the pint. Maya. All wind and piss like a tanyard cat. Cows in Connacht have long horns. As much as his bloody life is worth to go down and address his tall talk to the assembled multitude in Shannagolden where he daren't show his nose with the Molly Maguires looking for him to let daylight through him for grabbing the holding of an evicted tenant. "Hear, hear to that," says John Wise. "What will you have?" "An imperial yeomanry," says Lenehan, "to celebrate the occasion." "Half one, Terry," says John Wise, and the hands up. "Terry, are you asleep?" "Yes, sir," says Terry. "Small whiskey and bottle of Allsop." "Right, sir." Hanging over the bloody paper with Alf looking for spicy bits instead of attending to the general public. Picture of a butting match, trying to crack their bloody skulls, one chap going for the other with his head down like a bull at a gate, and another one, Black Beast burned in Omaha, Georgia. A lot of Deadwood Dicks in slouch hats, and they firing at a Sambo strung up in a tree with his tongue out and a bonfire under him. God, they ought to drown him in the sea after and electrocute and crucify him to make sure of their job. "But what about the fighting navy," says Ned, "that keeps our foes at bay?" "I'll tell you what about it," says the citizen. "Hell upon earth, it is. Read the revelations that's going on in the papers about flogging on the training ships at Portsmouth. A fellow writes that calls himself Disgusted One." So he starts telling us about corporal punishment and about the crew of tars and officers and rear admirals drawn up in cocked hats and the parson with his Protestant Bible to witness punishment and a young lad brought out, howling for his ma, and they tie him down on the butt end of a gun. "A rump and dozen," says the citizen, "was what that old ruffian Sir John Beresford called it, but the modern God's Englishman calls it caning on the breech." And says John Wise, "'Tis a custom more honoured in the breach than in the observance." Then he was telling us the master at arms comes along with a long cane, and he draws out, and he flogs the bloody backside off of the poor lad till he yells, "Mail a murder." "That's your glorious British Navy," says the citizen that bosses the earth. "The fellas that never will be slaves, with the only hereditary chamber on the face of God's earth, and their land in the hands of a dozen game hogs and cotton ball barons. That's the great empire they boast about of drudges and whipped serfs." "On which the sun never rises," says Joe. "And the tragedy of it is," says the citizen, "they believe it. The unfortunate yahoos believe it. They believe in Rod, the Scourger Almighty, creator of hell upon earth, and in Jackie Tar, the son of a gun, who was conceived of unholy boast, born of the fighting navy, suffered under rump and dozen, was scarified, flayed and curried, yelled like bloody hell, the third day he arose again from the bed, steered into heaven, sitteth on his beam end till further orders, whence he shall come to drudge for a living and be paid." "But," says Bloom, "isn't discipline the same everywhere? I mean, wouldn't it be the same here if you put force against force?" "Didn't I tell you? As true as I'm drinking this porter, if he was at his last gasp, he'd try to down face it that dying was living." "We'll put force against force," says the citizen. "We have our greater Ireland beyond the sea. They were driven out of house and home in the Black 47. Their mud cabins and their sheelings by the roadside were laid low by the battering ram, and the Times rubbed its hands and told the white-liver Saxons there would soon be as few Irish in Ireland as redskins in America. Even the Grand Turk sent us his piastres, but the Sassenach tried to starve the nation at home while the land was full of crops that the British hyenas bought and sold in Rio de Janeiro. Aye, they drove out the peasants in hordes. 20,000 of them died in the coffin ships. But those that came to the land of the free, remember the land of bondage. And they will come again, and with a vengeance. No, cravens, the sons of Granuel, the champions of Kathleen O'Houlihan." "Perfectly true," says Bloom. "But my point was, we are a long time waiting for that day, citizen," says Ned, "since the poor old woman told us that the French were on the sea and landed at Killala." "Aye," says John Wise, "we fought for the Royal Stuarts that reneged us against the Williamites, and they betrayed us. Remember Limerick and the broken treaty stone? We gave our best blood to France and Spain, the wild geese, Fontenoy, eh? And Sarsfield and O'Donnell, Duke of Tatwan in Spain, and Ulysses Brown of Camus that was field marshal to Maria Theresa. But what did we ever get for it? Ah, French, says the citizen, set of dancing masters. Do you know what it is? They were never worth a roasted fart to Ireland. Aren't they trying to make an entente cordiale now at Tay Pay's dinner party with perfidious Albion, firebrands of Europe, and they always were? Conspuez les Français, says Lenehan, nobbling his beer. And as for the Prussians and the Hanoverians, says Joe, haven't we had enough of those sausage-eating bastards on the throne from George the Elector down to the German lad and the flatulent old bitch that's dead? Jesus, I had to laugh at the way he came out with that about the old one with the winkers on her, blind drunk in her royal palace every night of God, old Vic, with her jorum of Mountain Dew and her coachman carting her up body and bones to roll into bed, and she pulling him by the whiskers and singing him old bits of songs about Erin on the Rhine and Come Where the Booze is Cheaper. Well, says J.J., we have Edward the Peacemaker now. Tell that to a fool, says the citizen. There's a bloody sight more pox than pax about that bio, Edward Guelph Whetton. And what do you think, says Joe, of the holy boys, the priests and bishops of Ireland, doing up his room in Maynooth in his satanic majesty's racing colours, and sticking up pictures of all the horses his jockeys rode, the Earl of Dublin, no less. They ought to have stuck up all the women he rode himself, says little Alf. And says J.J., considerations of space influenced their lordship's decision. Will you try another, citizen? Says Joe. Yes, sir, says he, I will. You? Says Joe. Beholden to you, Joe, says I. May your shadow never grow less. Repeat that, Douse, says Joe. Bloom was talking and talking with John Wise, and he quite excited with his dun-duckety mud-coloured mug on him and his old plum eyes rolling about. Persecution, says he, all the history of the world is full of it, perpetuating national hatred among nations. But do you know what a nation means? Says John Wise. Yes, says Bloom. What is it? Says John Wise. A nation? Says Bloom. A nation is the same people living in the same place. By God, then, says Ned, laughing, if that's so, I'm a nation, for I'm living in the same place for the past 5 years. So, of course, everyone had the laugh at Bloom, and says he, trying to muck out of it, are also living in different places. That covers my case, says Joe. What is your nation, if I may ask? Says the citizen. Ireland, says Bloom. I was born here. Ireland. The citizen said nothing, only cleared the spit out of his gullet and copy spat a red bank oyster out of him right in the corner. After you with the push, Joe, says he, taking out his handkerchief to swab himself dry. Here you are, citizen, says Joe. Take that in your right hand and repeat after me the following words. The much-treasured and intricately embroidered ancient Irish face-cloth, attributed to Solomon of Droma and Manus Tomalta Och Madonna, authors of the Book of Ballymote, was then carefully produced and called forth prolonged admiration. No need to dwell on the legendary beauty of the corner pieces, the acme of art, wherein one can distinctly discern each of the four evangelists in turn presenting to each of the four masters his evangelical symbol, a bog oak sceptre, a North American puma, a far nobler king of beasts than the British article, be it said in passing, a Kerry calf, and a golden eagle from Carran to a hill. The scenes depicted on the emunctory field, showing our ancient duns and raths and cromlechs and greanons and seats of learning and maledictive stones, are as wonderfully beautiful and the pigments as delicate as when the Sligo illuminators gave free rein to their artistic fantasy long, long ago in the time of the Barmecides, Glendalough, the lovely lakes of Killarney, the ruins of Clonmacnoise, Cong Abbey, Glen Inna and the 12 Pins, Ireland's Eye, the Green Hills of Talla, Croke Patrick, the brewery of Messrs. Arthur Guinness Son and Company, Limited, Loch Nee Banks, the Vale of Avoca, Isolde's Tower, the Mappus Obelisk, Sir Patrick Dunn's Hospital, Cape Clear, the Glen of Aherlow, Lynch's Castle, the Scotch House, Rathdown Union Workhouse at Loughlinstone, Tullamore Jail, Castle Connell, Rapids, Kilbally McShanachill, the Cross at Monasterbice, Jury's Hotel, St. Patrick's Purgatory, the Salmon Leap, Maynooth College Refectory, Curley's Hole, the three birthplaces of the first Duke of Wellington, the Rock of Cashel, the Bog of Allen, the Henry Street Warehouse, Fingal's Cave, all these moving scenes are still there for us today, rendered more beautiful still by the waters of sorrow which have passed over them and by the rich incrustations of time. Show us over the drink, says I. Which is which? That's mine, says Joe, as the devil said to the dead policeman. And I belong to a race, too, says Bloom, that is hated and persecuted. Also now, this very moment, this very instant. Gob, he near burdened his fingers with the butt of his old cigar. Robbed, says he, plundered, insulted, persecuted, taking what belongs to us by right. At this very moment, says he, putting up his fist, sold by auction in Morocco like slaves or cattle. Are you talking about the new Jerusalem? Says the citizen. I'm talking about injustice, says Bloom. Right, says John Wise. Stand up to it then with force like men. That's an almanac picture for you. Mark for a soft-nosed bullet. Old lardy face standing up to the business end of a gun. Gob, he'd adorn a sweeping brush, so he would, if he only had a nurse's apron on him. And then he collapses all of a sudden, twisting around all the opposite, as limp as a wet rag. But it's no use, says he. Force, hatred, history, all that. That's not life for men and women, insult and hatred. And everybody knows that it's the very opposite of that that is really life. What? Says Alf. Love, says Bloom. I mean the opposite of hatred. I must go now, says he to John Wise, just round to the court a moment to see if Martin is there. If he comes, just say I'll be back in a second, just a moment. Who's hindering you? And off he pops like grease lightning. A new apostle to the Gentiles, says the citizen. Universal love. Well, says John Wise, isn't that what we're told? Love your neighbour. That chap, says the citizen, beggar my neighbour is his motto. Love Maya, he's a nice pattern of a Romeo and Juliet. Love loves to love love. Nurse loves the new chemist. Constable 14A loves Mary Kelly. Gertie McDowell loves the boy that has the bicycle. M.B. loves a fair gentleman. Lee Chi Han, lovey up, kissy, cha poo chow. Jumbo the elephant loves Alice the elephant. Old Mr. Vershile with the ear trumpet loves old Mrs. Vershile with the toddened in eye. The man in the brown Macintosh loves a lady who is dead. His Majesty the King loves Her Majesty the Queen. Mrs. Norman W. Tupper loves Officer Taylor. You love a certain person, and this person loves that other person because everybody loves somebody, but God loves everybody. Well, Joe, says I, your very good health and song. More power, citizen. Hurrah there, says Joe. The blessing of God and Mary and Patrick on you, says the citizen, and he ups with his pint to wet his whistle. We know those canters, says he, preaching and picking your pocket. What about sanctimonious Cromwell and his Ironsides that put the women and children of Drogheda to the sword with the Bible text, God is love, pasted round the mouth of his cannon? The Bible. Did you read that skit in the United Irishman today about that Zulu chief that's visiting England? What's that? Says Joe. So the citizen takes up one of his paraphernalia papers and he starts reading out, a delegation of the chief cotton magnates of Manchester was presented yesterday to His Majesty the Alakai of Abiakota by Gold Stick in Waiting, Lord Walkup of Walkup on Eggs, to tender to His Majesty the heartfelt thanks of British traders for the facilities afforded them in his dominions. The delegation partook of luncheon, at the conclusion of which the dusky potentate, in the course of a happy speech, freely translated by the British chaplain, The Reverend Ananias, praise God, bare bones, tendered his best thanks to Massa Walkup and emphasized the cordial relations existing between Abbey Yakuta and the British Empire, stating that he treasured as one of his dearest possessions an illuminated Bible, the volume of the Word of God and the secret of England's greatness, graciously presented to him by the white chief woman, the great squaw Victoria, with a personal dedication from the august hand of the royal donor. The Alakai then drank a loving cup of first-shot usquaba to the toast, black and white, from the skull of his immediate predecessor in the dynasty, Kakachakachak, surnamed 40 Warts, after which he visited the chief factory of Cottonopolis and signed his mark in the visitor's book, subsequently executing a charming old Abiacutic war dance, in the course of which he swallowed several knives and forks amid hilarious applause from the Geddle hands. "Widow woman," says Ned, "I wouldn't doubt her. Wonder did he put that Bible to the same use as I would." "Same, only more so," says Lenehan, and thereafter in that fruitful land the broad-leaved mango flourished exceedingly. "Is that by Griffith?" said John Wise. "No," says the citizen, "it's not signed Shangana. It's only initialed P." "And a very good initial too," says Joe. "That's how it's worked," says the citizen. "Trade follows the flag." "Well," says J.J., "if they're any worse than those Belgians in the Congo Free State, they must be bad. Did you read that report by a man, what's this his name is?" "Casement," says the citizen. "He's an Irishman." "Yes, that's the man," says J.J., "raping the women and girls and flogging the natives on the belly to squeeze all the red rubber they can out of them." "I know where he's gone," says Lenehan, cracking his fingers. "Who?" says I. "Bloom," says he. "The courthouse is a blind. He had a few bob on throwaway, and he's gone to gather in the shekels." "Is it that white-eyed Kaffir?" says the citizen, "that never backed a horse in anger in his life?" "That's where he's gone," said Lenehan. "I met Bantam Lyons going to back that horse, only I put him off it, and he told me Bloom gave him the tip." "Betcha what you like he has 100 shillings to five on. He's the only man in Dublin has it. A dark horse. He's a bloody dark horse himself," says Joe. "Mind, Joe," says I, "show us the entrance out." "There you are," says Terry. "Goodbye, Ireland, I'm going to Gort." So I just went round the back of the yard to pump ship, and begod, 100 shillings to five, while I was letting off my throwaway 22, letting off my load, "Gob," says I to myself, "I knew he was uneasy in his 2 pints off of Joe and 1 in Slattery's off, in his mind, to get off the mark to 100 shillings is 5 quid, and when they were in the dark horse, Pisser Burke was telling me card party, and letting on the child was sick. Gob must have done about a gallon. Flabby arse of a wife, speaking down the tube, 'She's better,' or 'She's, oh, all our plans,' so he could vamoose with that pool if he won, or, 'Jesus, full up I was, trading without a license. Oh, Ireland, my nation,' says he, 'hike, fuck, never be up to those bloody, there's the last of it, Jerusalem, oh, cuckoos.' So anyhow, when I got back, they were at it. Ding-dong. John Wise saying it was Bloom gave the ideas for Sinn Féin to Griffith to put in his paper all kinds of gerrymandering, packed juries, and swindling the taxes off of the government, and appointing consuls all over the world to walk about selling Irish industries. Robbing Peter to pay Paul. Gob, that puts the bloody kibosh on it if old Sloppy Eyes is mucking up the show. Give us a bloody chance. God save Ireland from the likes of that bloody mouse about. Mr. Bloom with his argle bargle, and his old fella before him perpetrating frauds, old Methusalem Bloom, the robbing bagman that poisoned himself with the prussic acid after he swamped the country with his baubles and his penny diamonds. Loans by post on easy terms. Any amount of money advanced on note of hand. Distance no object, no security. Gob, he's like Lanty McHale's goat that'd go a piece of the road with everyone." "Well, it's a fact," says John Wise, "and there's the man now that'll tell you all about it, Martin Cunningham." Sure enough, the castle cab drove up with Martin on it, and Jack Power with him, and a fella named Crofter, or Crofton, pensioner out of the Collector General's, an orange man Blackburn does have on the registration, and he drawing his pay, or Crawford gallivanting around the country at the king's expense. Our travellers reached the rustic hostelry and alighted from their palfreys. "How varlet," cried he, who by his mien seemed the leader of the party, "saucy knave, to us." So saying, he knocked loudly with his sword hilt upon the open lattice. Mine host came forth at the summons, girding him with his tabard. "Give you good, then, my masters," said he with an obsequious bow. "Bestir thyself, sirrah," cried he who had knocked. "Look to our steeds, and for ourselves give us of your best, for ifeith we need it." "Lack-a-day, good masters," said the host, "my poor house has but a bare lather. I know not what to offer your lordships." "How now, fellow?" cried the second of the party, a man of pleasant countenance. "So, servest thou the king's messengers, Master Tapton?" An instantaneous change overspread the landlord's visage. "Cry you mercy, gentlemen," he said humbly. "An you be the king's messengers, God shield his majesty, you shall not want for aught. The king's friends, God bless his majesty, shall not go a-fasting in my house, I warrant me." "Then about," cried the traveller who had not spoken, a lusty trencherman by his aspect. "Hast aught to give us?" Mine host bowed again as he made answer. "What say you, good masters, to a squab pigeon pasty, some collops of venison, a saddle of veal, widgeon with crisp hog's bacon, a boar's head with pistachios, a basin of jolly custard, a medlar tansy, and a flagon of old Rhenish?" "Gadzooks," cried the last speaker, "that likes me well. Pistachios." "Aha!" cried he of the pleasant countenance. "A poor house and a bare ladder, quotha! 'Tis a merry rogue." So in comes Martin, asking where was Bloom. "Where is he?" says Lenehan, "defrauding widows and orphans." "Isn't that a fact?" says John Wise. "What I was telling the citizen about Bloom and the Sinn Féin." "That's so," says Martin, "or so they allege." "Who made those allegations?" says Alf. "I," says Joe, "I'm the alligator." "And after all," says John Wise, "why can't a Jew love his country like the next fellow?" "Why not?" says J.J., "when he's quite sure which country it is. Is he a Jew or a Gentile or a Holy Roman or a swaddler or what the hell is he?" says Ned. "Or who is he? No offence, Crofton." "Who is Junius?" says J.J. "We don't want him," says Croft of the Orange Man or Presbyterian. "He's a perverted Jew," says Martin, "from a place in Hungary, and it was he drew up all the plans according to the Hungarian system. We know that in the castle." "Isn't he a cousin of Bloom the dentist?" says Jack Power. "Not at all," says Martin, "only namesakes. His name was Virag, the father's name that poisoned himself. He changed it by deed poll, the father did." "That's the new Messiah for Ireland," says the citizen, "Island of saints and sages." "Well, they're still waiting for their Redeemer," says Martin. "For that matter, so are we." "Yes," says J.J., "and every male that's born, they think it may be their Messiah, and every Jew is in a tall state of excitement, I believe, till he knows if he's a father or a mother." "Expecting every moment will be his next," says Lenehan. "Oh, by God," says Ned, "you should have seen Bloom before that son of his that died was born. I met him one day in the South City markets, buying a tin of Neve's food 6 weeks before the wife was delivered." "En ventre sa mère," says J.J. "Do you call that a man?" says the citizen. "I wonder did he ever put it out of sight," says Joe. "Well, there were two children born anyhow," says Jack Power. "And who does he suspect?" says the citizen. "Cobb, there's many a true word spoken in jest. One of those mixed middlings he is. Lying up in the hotel, Pisser was telling me, once a month, with headache, like a totty with her courses. Do you know what I'm telling you? It'd be an act of God to take a hold of a fella the like of that and throw him in the bloody sea. Justifiable homicide, so it would. Then sloping off with his 5 quid without putting up a pint of stuff, like a man. Give us your blessing, not as much as would blind your eye." "Charity to the neighbour," says Martin. "But where is he? We can't wait." "A wolf in sheep's clothing," says the citizen. "That's what he is. Virag from Hungary. Ahasuerus, I call him. Cursed by God. "Have you time for a brief libation, Martin?" says Ned. "Only one," says Martin. "We must be quick. JJ and S. You, Jack? Crofton? 3 half-ones, Terry. St. Patrick would want to land again at Ballykinlair and convert us," says the citizen, "after allowing things like that to contaminate our shores." "Well," says Martin, rapping for his glass, "God bless all here is my prayer." "Amen," says the citizen. "And I'm sure he will," says Joe. And at the sound of the sacring bell, headed by a crucifer with acolytes, thurifers, boat-bearers, readers, ostiarii, deacons and subdeacons, the blessed company drew nigh of mitred abbots and priors and guardians and monks and friars, the monks of Benedict of Spoleto, Carthusians and Camel de Lacy, Cistercians and Olivetans, Oratorians and Valambrosans, and the friars of Augustine, Brigittines, Premonstratensians, Servi, Trinitarians, and the children of Peter Nolasco, and therewith from Carmel mount the children of Elijah Prophet, led by Albert Bishop and by Teresa of Avila, Calst and other, and friars, brown and grey, sons of poor Francis, Capuchins, Cordeliers, Minims and Observants, and the daughters of Clara, and the sons of Dominic, the friars, preachers, and the sons of Vincent, and the monks of St. Wulstan, and Ignatius, his children, and the confraternity of the Christian brothers, led by the Reverend Brother Edmund Ignatius Rice. And after came all saints and martyrs, virgins and confessors, St. Seer and St. Isidore Arator, and St. James the Less, and St. Phocas of Sinope, and St. Julian Hospitator, and St. Felix de Cantalice, and St. Simon Stylites, and St. Stephen Proto-Martyr, and St. John of God, and St. Ferriol, and St. Lergard, and St. Theodotus, and St. Vulmar, and St. Richard, and St. Vincent de Paul, and St. Martin of Todi, and St. Martin of Tours, and St. Alfred, and St. Joseph, and St. Denis, and St. Cornelius, and St. Leopold, and St. Bernard, and St. Terence, and St. Edward, and St. Owen Caniculus, and St. Anonymous, and St. Eponymous, and St. Pseudonymous, and St. Anonymous, and St. Paronymous, and St. Synonymous, and St. Lawrence O'Toole, and St. James of Dingle and Compostella, and St. Columcille, and St. Columba, and St. Celestine, and St. Colman, and St. Kevin, and St. Brendan, and St. Frigidian, and St. Senan, and St. Fachtna, and St. Columbanus, and St. Gall, and St. Forcy, and St. Fintan, and St. Fiacre, and St. John Nepomuk, and St. Thomas Aquinas, and St. Ives of Brittany, and St. Mikan, and St. Herman Joseph, and the three patrons of Holy Youth, St. Aloysius Gonzaga, and St. Stanislaus Koska, and St. John Berchmans, and the Saints Gervasius, Servasius, and Bonifacius, and St. Bride, and St. Kieran, and St. Canis of Kilkenny, and St. Gerlath of Tomb, and St. Finbar, and St. Papin of Ballymun, and Brother Aloysius Pacificus, and Brother Louis Bellicosus, and the Saints Rose of Lima, and of Viterbo, and St. Martha of Bethany, and St. Mary of Egypt, and St. Lucy, and St. Bridget, and St. Atracta, and St. Dimpna, and St. Ita, and St. Marian Calpensis, and our blessed Sister Teresa of the Child Jesus, and St. Barbara, and St. Scholastica, and St. Ursula, with 11,000 virgins. And all came with nimbi and arioles and gloriae, bearing palms and harps and swords and olive crowns, in robes whereon were woven the blessed symbols of their efficacies, inkhorns, arrows, loaves, cruces, feathers, axes, trees, bridges, babes in a bathtub, shells, wallets, shears, keys, dragons, lilies, buckshot, beards, hogs, lamps, bellows, beehives, soup ladles, stars, snakes, anvils, boxes of Vaseline, bells, crutches, forceps, stags' horns, watertight boots, hawks, millstones, eyes on a dish, wax candles, aspergills, unicorns. And as they wended their way by Nelson's Pillar, Henry Street, Mary Street, Capel Street, Little Britain Street, chanting the introit in Epiphania Domini, which beginneth Surge Illuminare, and thereafter most sweetly the gradual Omnes, which saith De Saba Venient, They did divers wonders such as casting out devils, raising the dead to life, multiplying fishes, healing the halt and the blind, discovering various articles which had been mislaid, interpreting and fulfilling the scriptures, blessing and prophesying. And last, beneath a canopy of cloth of gold, came the Reverend Father O'Flynn, attended by Malachy and Patrick. And when the good fathers had reached the appointed place, the house of Bernard Kiernan and Company Limited, 8, 9 and 10 Little Britain Street, wholesale grocers, wine and brandy shippers, licensed for the sale of beer, wine and spirits for consumption on the premises, the celebrant blessed the house and censed the mullioned windows and the groins and the vaults and the arrases and the capitals and the pediments and the cornices and the engrailed arches and the spires and the cupolas and sprinkled the lintels thereof with blessed water and prayed that God might bless that house as he had blessed the house of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and make the angels of his light to inhabit therein. And entering, he blessed the viands and the beverages and the company of all the blessed answered his prayers. Adiutorium nostrum in nomine Domini, qui fecit caelum et terram, Dominus vobiscum, et cum spiritu tuo. And he laid his hands upon that he blessed, and gave thanks, and he prayed, and they all with him prayed, Deus, quius verbo sanctificantur omnia, benedictionem tuam effundes super creaturas istas, et presta ut quisquis ei secundum legem et voluntatem tuam cum gratiarum actione usus fuerit per invocationem sanctissimi nominis tui, corporis sanctiatem et animae tut Telam te auctore precipiat per Christum Dominum nostrum. And so say all of us, says Jack. 1,000 a year, Lambert, says Crofton or Crawford. Right, says Ned, taking up his John Jameson and butter for fish. I was just looking around to see who the happy thought would strike, when be damned but in he comes again letting on to be in a hell of a hurry. I was just round at the courthouse, says he, looking for you. I hope I'm not. No, says Martin, we're ready. Courthouse my eye, and your pockets hanging down with gold and silver. Mean bloody scut. Stand us a drink itself. Devil a sweet fear. There's a Jew for you. All for number one. Cute as a shithouse rat. 100 to 5. Don't tell anyone, says the citizen. Beg your pardon, says he. Come on, boys, says Martin, seeing it was looking blue. Come along now. Don't tell anyone, says the citizen, letting a ball out of him. It's a secret. And the bloody dog woke up and let a growl. Bye-bye all, says Martin, and he got them out as quick as he could. Jack Power and Crofton, or whatever you call him, and him in the middle of them letting on to be all at sea and up with them on the bloody jaunting car. Off with you, says Martin to the Jarvey. The milk-white dolphin tossed his mane, and rising in the golden poop, the helmsman spread the bellying sail upon the wind, and stood off forward with all sail set, the spinnaker to larboard. A many comely nymphs drew nigh to starboard and to larboard, and clinging to the sides of the noble bark, they linked their shining forms, as doth the cunning wheelwright, when he fashions about the heart of his wheel the equidistant rays whereof each one is sister to another, and he binds them all with an outer ring, and giveth speed to the feet of men, when as they ride to a hosting, or contend for the smile of ladies fair. Even so did they come and set them, those willing nymphs, the undying sisters, and they laughed, sporting in a circle of their foam, and the bark clave the waves. But begob, I was just lowering the heel of the pint when I saw the citizen getting up to waddle to the door, puffing and blowing with the dropsy, and he cursing the curse of Cromwell on him, bell, book, and candle in Irish, spitting and spatting out of him, and Joe and little Alf round him like a leprechaun trying to peaceify him. "Let me alone," says he. And begob he got as far as the door, and they holding him, and he bawls out of him, "Three cheers for Israel!" Arda, sit down on the parliamentary side of your arse, for Christ's sake, and don't be making a public exhibition of yourself. Jesus, there's always some bloody clown or other kicking up a bloody murder about bloody nothing. God, it'd turn the path or sour in your guts, so it would. And all the ragamuffins and sluts of the nation round the door, and Martin telling the Jarvie to drive ahead, and the citizen bawling, and Alf and Joe at him to whisht, and he on his high horse about the Jews and the loafers, calling for a speech, and Jack Power trying to get him to sit down on the car and hold his bloody jaw, and a loafer with a patch over his eye start singing, "If the man in the moon was a Jew, Jew, Jew," and a slut shouts out of her, "Hey, mister, your fly is open, mister." And says he, "Mendelssohn was a Jew, and Karl Marx and Mercadante and Spinoza, and the Saviour was a Jew, and his father was a Jew. Your God." "He had no father," says Martin. "That'll do now. Drive ahead." "Who's God?" says the citizen. "Well, his uncle was a Jew," says he. "Your God was a Jew. Christ was a Jew, like me." God, the citizen made a plunge back into the shop. "By Jesus," says he, "I'll brain that bloody Jew man for using the holy name. By Jesus, I'll crucify him, so I will. Give us that biscuit box here." "Stop, stop," says Joe. A large and appreciative gathering of friends and acquaintances from the metropolis and Greater Dublin assembled in their thousands to bid farewell to Nag Yassagos Uram Lipoti Virag, late of Messrs. Alexander Toms, printers to His Majesty, on the occasion of his departure for the distant clime of Shash Harminch Brojugalius Douglas, Meadow of Murmuring Waters. The ceremony, which went off with great éclat, was characterised by the most affecting cordiality. An illuminated scroll of ancient Irish vellum, the work of Irish artists, was presented to the distinguished phenomenologist on behalf of a large section of the community, and was accompanied by the gift of a silver casket, tastefully executed in the style of ancient Celtic ornament, a work which reflects every credit on the makers, Messrs. Jacob Agus Jacob. The departing guest was the recipient of a hearty ovation, many of those who were present being visibly moved when the select orchestra of Irish pipes struck up the well-known strains of "Come Back to Erin," followed immediately by Rakotsi's March. Tar battles and bonfires were lighted along the coastline of the four seas on the summits of the Hill of Hope, Three Rock Mountain, Sugarloaf, Brayhead, the Mountains of Mourne, the Galtees, the Ox and Donegal, and Spern Peaks, the Nagels and the Bogras, the Connemara Hills, the Reeks of M. Gillicuddy, Schlievachty, Schlievberna, and Schlievbloom. Amid cheers that rent the welkin, responded to by answering cheers from a big muster of henchmen on the distant Cambrian and Caledonian hills, the mastodontic pleasure ship slowly moved away, saluted by a final floral tribute from the representatives of the fair sex, who were present in large numbers, while, as it proceeded down the river, escorted by a flotilla of barges, the flags of the ballast office and custom house were dipped in salute, as were also those of the electrical power station at the Pigeon House and the Pool Beg Light. "Vijant la tasra, kedvesh baraton. Vijant la tasra, gone but not forgotten." Cobb, the devil wouldn't stop until he got hold of the bloody tin anyhow, and out with him, and little Alf hanging on to his elbow, and he shouting like a stuck pig, as good as any bloody play in the Queen's Royal Theatre, "Where is he till I murder him?" And Ned and J.J. paralysed with the laughing. "Bloody wars," says I, "I'll be in for the last gospel." But as luck would have it, the Jarvie got the nag's head round the other way and off with him. "Hold on, citizen," says Joe, "stop." Be gob, he drew his hand and made a swipe and let fly. Mercy of God, the sun was in his eyes or he'd have left him for dead. Gob, he near sent it into the County Longford. The bloody nag took fright, and the old mongrel after the car like bloody hell, and all the populace shouting and laughing, and the old tin box clattering along the street. The catastrophe was terrific and instantaneous in its effect. The observatory of Dunsink registered in all 11 shocks, all of the fifth grade of Mercalli's scale, and there is no record extant of a similar seismic disturbance in our island since the earthquake of 1534, the year of the rebellion of Silken Thomas. The epicenter appears to have been that part of the metropolis which constitutes the Inns Key Ward and parish of St. Michan, covering a surface of 41 acres, 2 roods and 1 square pole or perch. All the lordly residences in the vicinity of the Palace of Justice were demolished, and that noble edifice itself, in which, at the time of the catastrophe, important legal debates were in progress, is literally a mass of ruins beneath which, it is to be feared, all the occupants have been buried alive. From the reports of eyewitnesses, it transpires that the seismic waves were accompanied by a violent atmospheric perturbation of cyclonic character. An article of headgear, since ascertained to belong to the much-respected Clerk of the Crown and Peace, Mr. George Fothrell, and a silk umbrella with gold handle, with the engraved initials, crest, coat of arms, and house number of the erudite and worshipful chairman of Quarter Sessions, Sir Frederick Falconer, Recorder of Dublin, have been discovered by search parties in remote parts of the island, respectively, the former on the 3rd basaltic ridge of the Giant's Causeway, the latter embedded to the extent of 1 foot 3 inches in the sandy beach of Hole Open Bay near the old Head of Kinsale. Other eyewitnesses depose that they observed an incandescent object of enormous proportions hurtling through the atmosphere at a terrifying velocity in a trajectory directed southwest by west. Messages of condolence and sympathy are being hourly received from all parts of the different continents, and the Sovereign Pontiff has been graciously pleased to decree that a special Missa pro defunctis shall be celebrated simultaneously by the ordinaries of each and every cathedral church of all the episcopal dioceses, subject to the spiritual authority of the Holy See in suffrage of the souls of the faithful departed who have been so unexpectedly called away from our midst. The work of salvage, removal of debris, human remains, etc. has been entrusted to Messrs. Michael Mead and Son, 159 Great Brunswick Street, and Messrs. T. and C. Martin, 77, 78, 79 and 80 North Wall, assisted by the men and officers of the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry under the general supervision of H.R.H., Rear Admiral, the Right Honourable Sir Hercules Hannibal Habeas Corpus Anderson, KG, KP, KT, PC, KCB, MP, JP, MB, DSO, SOD, MFH, MRIA, BL, MUSE, DOC, PLG, FTCD, FRUI, FRCPI and FRCSI. You never saw the like of it in all your born puff. Gob, if he got that lottery ticket on the side of his poll, he'd remember the gold cup, he would so. But begob, the citizen would have been lagged for assault and battery, and Joe for aiding and abetting. The Jarvie saved his life by furious driving as sure as God made Moses. What? Oh, Jesus, he did. And he let a volley of oaths after him. Did I kill him? Says he, or what? And he shouting to the bloody dog, after him, Gary. After him, boy. And the last we saw was the bloody car rounding the corner, and old sheep's face on it gesticulating, and the bloody mongrel after it with his lugs back, for all he was bloody well worth to tear him limb from limb. 105. Jesus, he took the value of it out of him, I promise you. When lo, there came about them all a great brightness, and they beheld the chariot wherein he stood ascend to heaven. And they beheld him in the chariot, clothed upon in the glory of the brightness, having raiment as of the sun, fair as the moon, and terrible, that for awe they durst not look upon him. And there came a voice out of heaven calling, Elijah, Elijah! And he answered with the main cry, Abba Adonai! And they beheld him, even him, Ben Bloom Elijah, amid clouds of angels, ascend to the glory of the brightness at an angle of 45 degrees over Donahoe's in Little Green Street, like a shot off a shovel.